Hello, and welcome to The Trawl, the show where we scroll through Twitter so you don't have to. I'm Marina Perkis.
And I'm Gemma Forte. And this week, The Trawl's dredged up some scandals, some juice, some hilarity, and what feels like some mild hysteria due to a backdrop of Britain having an economic nervous breakdown. But on the plus side, the women, the lionesses, won the Euros, so yay to that.
Yay, that was so good. So I'm by no means a massive football fan, but it did make me feel bloody good inside seeing the women's game finally get some of the recognition it deserves. But less yay than that, I'm sorry, is the never-ending leadership debate that's been rattling on, which for Twitter is the gift that keeps on giving. And I'm also looking forward to trawling through what's going on, or some might say not going on, with the opposition. There is a lot to say.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to getting stuck into that as well. But I'm going to start on a high point. And I have to mention, at the beginning of the week, Marina, oh my God, you absolutely killed it. So just to give everybody a bit of background. Right, so Marina and I both go on to a show called Jeremy Vine quite regularly. And the other day, Marina's on her way and I got a WhatsApp going, oh, I've got a really juicy topic. And I just sort of thought, good. And I thought she'll be loving that. So later, I think I was doing some work from home that day. And I briefly thought, right, I've got to see what she's up to. And I tuned in. But I caught a bit where you were talking about personalised number plates and you looked really sort of like just underwhelmed. I thought, I don't think this is the topic she was talking about.
No.
So I thought, oh, I'll have a look later. And then here it was, Twitter blew up. You basically have proved yourself as an investigative journalist, Marina.
Oh, it's not, you know, it's not just down to me. I have to thank a lot of my Twitter followers. They are the providers of a lot of this scoop and a lot of this material. But basically, to give some background, I was on with the political editor of The Telegraph, a guy called Christopher Hope. Never been on with him before, but I couldn't wait because, like, to be able to go up against someone from the Telegraph, or, you know, the Tory graph, as it's also sometimes referred to. Just for people that don't know, the Telegraph was actually once a serious paper, but you can probably get more reliable news from the Beano these days. Anyway, I did my usual thing and I got up at 5 a.m. on the morning because just to see, you know, what the latest news is. And my goodness, did my Twitter trawling that day.
I thought you were going to say your tits were on fire.
It was part of my warm-up in the morning.
I get that too with an interesting news story. They go, all funny.
And not quite as exciting as that. But I found on Twitter, basically the Telegraph had run this story the day before saying that 10,000 Tory party members had voted to get Boris Johnson on the ballot to be PM, which in itself is like bananas. But again, this is why I love Twitter. A guy called Martin F. Robbins, at MJ Robbins, looked closer at this members poll and he found that literally anybody, anywhere, irrespective of whether you were a party member or not, could sign.
I think we have to listen to a clip. So for anybody who's not on Twitter, because if you are, you've probably seen this, here is a short clip of Marina going off and being brilliant.
I just want to go back to this members poll, 12,000 people. Mm. 12,000 members.
In 8 days.
I'm one of those signatories. Do you know why? Because anyone can go on and sign that petition, that pathetic petition that has no validation. You are a journalist, Christopher. It took me 5 minutes to find this out. And you've come on here and this has been spun as a story. The media are picking it up. ITV have put it out as a story. This is a nonsense. Literally anyone can go on and sign this, right? Point one. I would really have expected better.
I was absolutely. Yeah. The thing is, because factually it's fantastic, but also, you know, bless him and all that. But he is huge at the Telegraph. And like you say, when you went, I expected better. All right, headmistress, but so true. And the fact that it took you about 5 minutes, and when you called it this pathetic petition, I think you spoke for us all. I really do. But I just want to know, like, was it a bit eggy afterwards Christopher?
I would have preferred it if he was, you know, a bit of an ego, a bit of a twat.
No, he's quite sweet. I've met him as well. And he's sort of
really
quite a nice
sweet
guy.
You could have given me the heads up, Gemma, because I was there, like, I was sort of seething, because I'm furious at the stuff that is put out in the Telegraph, right? I consider an awful lot of it to be pure bollocks or Tory propaganda. But actually, during the ad breaks afterwards, it was like I'd kicked a puppy. You know, I felt really bad. And he seemed
You didn't kick a puppy. You just pointed out some facts. And I hear you, you know, like I've met plenty of people where I just couldn't disagree more on their politics. But then in the break, you find yourself discussing, you know, the price of duvets at TK Maxx. And it can be surreal. That's a true story. Carol Malone.
Yeah. See, I find it really difficult to separate people, though. So if your job is basically putting out stuff, which I think is polluting the minds of the public, I find it hard to separate that from who you are as a person. So if I meet you and that's your job, don't expect me to hold back.
Okay, before we plunge into the politics of the week, I'm going to mention a tweet which is really, really old, but it keeps making a comeback. Just a quickie. Delta Airlines tweeted back in January, name a city that changed your life. And underneath, people were replying with, oh, Paris, or, oh, well, I had my honeymoon in Rome. But the reply with by far the biggest response just said, Wuhan.
I mean, fair enough. I mean, I'll be happy to never hear.
Definitely changed all our lives, didn't it?
Oh, God. I don't want to hear about that place ever again. But imagine if you're actually from Wuhan. And your
and that's what you're associated
just,
with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The global plague.
Pandemic. So also in my trawl, I spotted with incredulity the latest set of photos released by Johnson's team of him basically exploiting the situation in Ukraine because they actually like him there. They like him there more than most of the British population do. So I just want to describe these photos because, I'm sorry, he was like dressed up like Action Man, but then with a sort of touch of Bill Oddie because he had this huge lens camera, like he's an actual soldier, which we know he isn't. And it just was so odds with what is happening in the UK.
Why is he still in charge? Like, what is the point of him? He's actually more AWOL now than he was when he was in power. What was the point of him clinging on for another three months? And who is supposed to be running things? He is more interested in dressing up for photo ops and having like his wedding party paid for by donors. And this whole, the dressing up thing, Gemma.
I'm starting to think because when I was a kid I had a fancy dress box which my mum just put old clothes that I didn't fit anymore, or occasionally we'd get a costume at Christmas or something. You delve in, your friends come around and you dress up, and I'm thinking, is that like Tories don't do that as kids or something, so they have to do it when they get older? I don't know.
And what do they think we're going to gain from it? Like, why do they turn up to people's places of work, don their uniforms and pretend to do their jobs? No one else does that. We don't turn up to the Houses of Parliament and pretend to tear the arse out of the country, do we, Gemma?
No, we don't.
But back to Boris Johnson's cosplay fetish. I found a tweet by @tootsmog, which says, flies a typhoon, throws a grenade, jumps off a wall, drives a tank through a ditch filled with custard. Anything else you fancy doing in these final days in office?
It is so weird. Nick Abbott from LBC said, what is this chump doing at our great expense? And Claire Hepworth, who's a socialist trade unionist and an OBE, says he sees everything as a game. I've run out of pejorative terms with which to describe him. I haven't, Claire. I've got some.
I haven't either.
Marina has too. But we're not going to say them on the podcast. Bit rude. No, but seriously, though, it is frustrating, and I think we're allowed to be angry about it because it's like a sinister version of having a supply teacher. So when you're a kid and the supply teacher comes in and you can just sniff that there's no control anymore, and I feel like that's what's happening with Great Britain. And Martin Lewis, the money expert, is sort of trying to step into the breach, I feel, to try and regain some order and stop us all from falling into an abyss. And I feel so sorry for him because every time you see him talking, he's like getting more and more worked up and angry and frustrated to the point where he's making these sort of hostage videos on Twitter, like banging his head against the wall, quite frankly.
I love him. He's such a champion for the people, which is probably why he's had 1.3 million views for a homemade video that he tweeted with the caption, I'm afraid a financial cataclysm will hit the UK roughly the time the new PM starts, devastating lives. This is a video letter to you and the Conservative leadership candidates to help you and plea for them to prepare and prevent for the worst. So here's a short clip from the 10 minutes of him saying the polite version of, do something, you muppets.
For those at the bottom end of universal credit and many state pensioners, the rises when added to the increasing costs of food and transport and other inflation means they'll be back to that choice between starving and freezing. This winter, we're going to need warm spaces. Public buildings, local councils, universities and libraries will need to open their doors and invite people in to keep warm because they can't afford to put their own heating on. And to the Conservative Party candidates, you need to understand the level of feeling out there. When I've talked about this on social media, and I have a decent following, and people's eyes are opened, the biggest response is actually people suggesting civil unrest, primarily in the form of mass non-payment.
And it is. I mean, on Twitter, this is becoming a quite common theme with lots of advice on how to just simply not pay your bills in the right way and protest movements. And I think they're going to be growing.
Why wouldn't they? This is only going to get worse. I didn't realise. So it's actually, we've got the price rise that's just, I think, come into play. There's the other one in October. There's another one in January. Like, it's just relentless. It gets worse and worse. And in that clip, just before the bit that we played, he actually talks about typical energy bills costing over a third of the new state pension. It just reminds me of, do you remember poor Elsie? The pensioner who was using her freedom pass. Yeah. Susanna Reid, Boris Johnson interview. And so Elsie basically was this pensioner who said she was using her freedom pass to ride around on buses all day to keep warm. And so Susanna Reid confronted Boris Johnson with this story. And his response was to boast about the fact that he was the one that invented the freedom pass when he was mayor of London. Because what? Because that's a kind of emotionally bankrupt moron that he is.
I mean, that's such a reach, isn't it?
But not only that, Gemma, wasn't even true. It was a lie. My London pointed out that the Freedom Pass was created in 1973 and Johnson would have been 9. So I don't think he is responsible for that.
Yeah, I mean, that sort of lack of empathy for Elsie is terrifying. And you know what really frustrates me is that here in Britain, we are getting 54% rises in our energy bills while all the big energy firms are announcing huge profits.
Oh,
and,
huge.
And yet nothing is done. Let's have a look across the water, just a few miles away in France. And Macron has nationalised EDF. He's literally gone, can't have this, we're nationalising you, bill increases capped at 4%. So, you know, and that's in the Financial Times, Macron wins French lawmakers backing for budget to nationalise EDF. That is leadership. Paid to pollute tweeted, energy prices are predicted to rise to almost £3,500 a year by October. This means one in three households could be in fuel poverty this winter. And today, Shell announced record profits of more than, wait for it, 9 billion from the last 3 months alone. This isn't a coincidence. When will people wake up, Marina? It drives me mad.
Oh, God. Parody PM, at Parody PM, which is a parody Boris Johnson account, tweeted, thank goodness Margaret Thatcher privatised our energy companies. Otherwise, the 1.34 billion profit Centrica have just made might have been wasted on ordinary people instead of wealthy shareholders. Ugh, the injustice and the inequality of it all. And also these oil giants, they are so brazen. Oil giant BP said it has, I quote, more cash than we know what to do with. And the boss, who's a guy called Bernard Looney, nice name, called the firm a cash machine. Called it a cash machine. And he's saying this stuff in the public arena, just doesn't care at all, completely tone deaf, at the same time as rejecting calls for a windfall tax and splashing out on a tasty £5.2 million apartment, as reported by
the Mirror. What are we getting for this? We're getting a bit of old lecky that they just switch a switch on for.
Right. So this is it. I never realised this. I went out for dinner last week with a pal of mine who is, believe it or not, Tory voter. Well, he was. I think
he was a friend
up.
Or he was a Tory voter.
To be honest, we never used to talk politics. I've known him for like over 10 years. And like probably many of our listeners, maybe don't talk politics with your friends because they switch off, they're not as engaged, whatever.
He's of course, we've all got friends from across the political spectrum or relatives or whatever. So I'm just being facetious.
Of course, of course. And you need to be able to have conversations with people from everywhere, right? But exactly. We're having this conversation over dinner and he made me think, because he said, actually, you know, privatisation doesn't work in a non-competitive marketplace where the customer isn't getting an improved product. So think about it, right? Think about however long you've been getting your electricity or gas for, right? You never turn to your pal and go, oh, my electricity was top notch last week. Really good, lecky. It's the same. It's the same old product.
Oh, I've just charged my phone and that electricity that went into it, ooh, it was so good. Worth every
penny. That was some juice.
That was wonderful. I could just, oh, it's electric. Rachel Clark at Dr_Oxford. She just put, levelling up, no. Fuel poverty, food poverty, obscene inequality and fat cats getting ever fatter. So true.
Ugh. But wait, you know what, Gemma, tell a lie. We do have growth of something for the British public. Do you know what that is?
What is it?
Food banks.
Oh, God, it's so sad.
Huge growth. In fact, the Statista site claims that between 2008 and 2021, the number of food bank users increased every year from 26,000 to a staggering 2.5 million.
Ugh. I mean, I remember there was that report and there was somebody who sort of said, well, you know, it's at least they're giving us food banks like it was a positive, sort of really missing the point that when
Jacob
Labour
Rees-Mogg?
Were in, we didn't need them. We didn't need them before.
No,
it's
pitiful. No. Jacob Rees-Mogg actually said that he found them uplifting. So I reckon he'll be dead chuffed with those figures.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because he says that and it's like the opposite of an uplifting thing to say. Like everything he says, it just makes me feel really, makes me feel quite violent and I'm not a violent person. you know, but you know what? Now we're hearing, as per Martin Lewis in our previous clip, warm banks. Oh, warm banks. So basically someone like Jacob Rees-Mogg basically wants to sort of repeal the corn laws, probably, I mean, I'm joking now, but sort of bring back hanging, go back to horse and trap, you know, sort of a weird Victorian pencil. So we've got food banks, so we're sort of basically verging towards sort of Victorian times with workhouses. It's just unbelievable. And in fact, on that note, at Duncan Keeling, who's a lefty writer and socialist, said on Twitter, presumably at some point the government will start to give the people using these warm banks something to do while they're in this housing. If only there was a name for that kind of structure. Obviously referencing workhouses. And he's not even vaguely far off with that. And then somebody who describes themselves as joyless woke elitist that the tabloids warned you about, and she's also a big fan of crisps, she's at Alison Kate BR, just said, I just wish more people saw that food banks and warm banks and community kitchens do good things, but they're not a good thing. They're an emergency response to a human crisis caused by deliberate economic management. I'm glad they're there, but they make me very, very sad. Absolutely echoing exactly how I feel.
It is very sad, but our politicians just do not seem to care. It doesn't feel like they're listening. In fact, while Martin Lewis is desperately trying to stop people from starving or freezing or just general, you know, destitution, across the land in a studio far away, Liz Truss and Rishi Sunak are discussing the really important issues like earrings.
Oh my God, earrings gate. You see, in a way, at least, I don't know, is it depressing or is it light relief? I'm going to go with light relief from all the hell. So Nadine Dorries, everybody's favourite, the Minister for Culture, Media and Sport, and Johnson super fangirl, who sort of lights up when around him. Well, actually, she does light up when she's fascistically talking about privatising Channel 4 as well, because she doesn't like their news content. She sort of prowls round the subject of Channel 4 in the same way that Cruella de Vil might get round Crufts. You know what I mean? Sort of, oh, I don't like it around here. I'm going to do something about these puppies. Anyway, there's been all sorts going on. I mean, for the trawl, she's proper the trawl fodder. So firstly, government minister retweeted somebody who'd tweeted a picture of Rishi Sunak stabbing Johnson in the back. So that's a bizarre thing, a bizarre choice. But before the latest leadership debate, which was on BBC this time, it feels like it was 500 years ago, she tweeted this. Liz Truss will be travelling the country wearing her earrings, which cost circa £4.50 from Claire's Accessories. And meanwhile, Rishi visits Teesside in Prada shoes worth £450 and sported bespoke suit as he prepared for crunch leadership vote.
Oh, God. She's such an idiot. My mind is boggled. This is a Secretary of State, for heaven's sake. And she takes time out of her busy Boris fangirl day to compose these tweets. And you know as well that she's such a knob that she thinks she's played some kind of blinder as well.
Oh, totally. Presses send, like really satisfied. Mm, like, there you go. Mm.
That'll show them. James Felton, who is, we've referenced him before in this podcast because he's great, hilarious, Peter. He replied to the earrings one and he wrote, "Not sure you want to yank too hard at the this Tory is too privileged thread." And then he later followed up with a Sky News tweet which called out Dorries for having £6,000 diamond earrings.
Oh my God, I know. I mean, it's so misjudged. At Hollerella, who's also featured before, she pointed this out and said, "Nadine Dorries logic, Boris Johnson's £840 a roll, gold wallpaper, fine. Partially funded by the taxpayer, no less. Rishi's shoes, abomination. What we need is a PM with green earlobes, thanks to £4.50 earrings."
Brilliant. I must say, I did have to wade in on this because I couldn't help myself. And I actually did respond to Nadine's as well and said, "Was Liz Truss wearing those earrings when she demanded she fly private jet to Australia, which cost the taxpayer £500,000?
I know, just also, so
got ratioed the shit out of her.
I bet it did. You know, all that private dinner where she absolutely insisted on taking some old cronies to some really expensive place. And even her spads around her were like, "Oh, I think it's a bit expensive." She said, "No, I absolutely insist." Oh, no, sorry, that was Truss, actually. That was Truss, sorry. But anyway, yeah.
But yeah, still, this is most probably going to be RPM, yeah. Which is great. I was quite enjoying reports or reading reports of the slapped wrist she'd had from her own party, who were asking her to refrain from posting such unhelpful tweets. Johnny Mercer, who is Cabinet Office Minister, said, "The puerile nature of this leadership contest is embarrassing." Yes, yes, it is, Johnny. And then this was brilliant. Tory MP for Guildford, Angela Richardson, simply tweeted, "For fuck's sake, Nadine." Muted. Sorry, I normally like to say the F. I say F word instead of actually saying it, but I'd lose the joke there. So sorry.
Sometimes
listeners.
You need it. That's the thing with swearing. If you do it sporadically, but you do it in good moments, it's effective, but just not all
exactly.
the time.
Exactly, that's what I was hoping for. And I also spotted this tweet from Telegraph writer and chairman of the Hornsey and Wood Green Conservatives, Ben Obese-Jekdi, who said, "Nadine, this isn't helpful. We're all on the same team. We criticise this coverage when it's aimed at female politicians. We should do the same when it's male politicians."
I mean, it's just absolutely unbelievable. And this sort of pathetic, vacuous jabbing then set the tone for the debate. Did you see it, Marina, or did you have something better to do, like filing your face or grouting some tiles or something?
I was going to be really rude there and say marginally better. I had my in-laws over for dinner and I probably should. My father-in-law listens to this. Hello, John.
Hello,
so hello. I probably shouldn't say that. But I caught the last 15 minutes. And honestly, that last 15 minutes was just depressing. Had me questioning what the hell I'm doing with my life. And it sounds like I missed the best bit anyway. So what on earth was going on at the beginning of the show?
Yeah, you see, this is where I love Twitter, because I sit there and if I'm in on my own or my kids are upstairs, whatever, the Twitter is the comedic company that I quite enjoy. So Rachel Venables just put, "Oh my God." So basically at the beginning, this camera zoomed in and Truss and Sunak were stood there totally still. And everybody thought they were cardboard cutouts. And then one of them blinked and it was like, "Oh my God, no, it's actually them." So that's exactly what she put. She just put, "Oh my God, I thought they were cardboard cutouts until he blinked." And then it got underway and it was just, oh, it was the worst. It was the worst yet. So Sunak was like really hectoring and really interrupting. So that just wasn't a good look for him. And then they did this bit where some economists started questioning Truss, and she looked like I did when I got my maths GCSE paper and was like, "I haven't revised fractions." It was just sort of like, just awful. She just didn't look like she knew what she was talking about. The whole thing was awful. Ian Dunn He was great. He does sort of commentary, doesn't he?
I love him. He's, for our listeners, he is well worth a follow. So he's a writer for the I newspaper, and he describes himself as a jumped up baldy and liberal extremist. He did us all a huge public service in providing Twitter commentary throughout the debate. And he tweeted, "Do wish Sunak would stop referring to being taught about climate change by his kids. You're the Chancellor of the Exchequer. I don't want you learning about the greatest existential threat to the planet from your effing children."
This was the bit where I was like, are they for real? So you've wanged on about tax cut, tax cut, tax cut, and now climate. And it was exactly that. Will from the Inbetweeners, as we now call him from last week's episode, was going, oh yeah, the climate. Oh, it's so funny because like my kids tell me all about it. I was like, oh, that's dangerous. You might be leading the country. That's sort of a worry. We need a massive vision to sort of insulate our homes. And maybe you should be talking about things like energy storage is really, really big, or renewables. No, he mentioned recycling, at which point I'm thinking, we're going to have to do more than sort of washing out our Marmite pots, babe. It was awful. And then Ian Dunn did another tweet. "Did you learn about fiscal policy from your children too? No, because you actually give a shit about that." And it's so true. I mean, Sunak's like one-way street, and it's the economy and that's it. And then, just to add insult to injury with all this awfulness, the blooming hearing's got a mention. Cannot believe it on this debate, to be promised. So Shivani Sharma, who's a producer at LBC, tweeted, "Liz Truss says she doesn't know how Nadine Dorries knows where she got her earrings from. This is the leadership debate to help decide our next PM."
Oh, God, it is. Christ. Oh, and a similar vein was this tweet by Phil Serpice at Serpice A, who's a professor of EU law, who was obviously unimpressed at the topics being covered. He wrote, "Claire's accessories, big fat tick. Northern Ireland protocol, big fat cross." And another tweet from a guy called Tom Freeman at Snooze in Brief, who gave his thoughts on the debate, tweeting, "Sunak talks like a Tony Blair simulation running on Ed Miliband's operating system. Truss comes across as a patchy reconstruction of Margaret Thatcher, based on fragmentary descriptions of her in a few ancient scrolls, translated by Chris Grayling."
Chris Grayling, what's happened to him? Oh, I'm just going to introduce one last tweet, okay, this on this subject. This is from Liam Thorpe, the political editor of the Liverpool Echo, whose actually account I'm really enjoying. He tweeted, "I'm not sure this new BBC quiz show where politicians just tell quick fire lies is going to take off." Take a listen.
"First of all, those huge queues that we have seen over the weekend in Dover, in Folkestone, is Brexit to blame for those queues? Yes or no?"
"No."
"Categorical."
Categorical bullshit.
No, of course they're not. No. Nothing to do with it at all.
We are down. This is so depressing. We're down to 2 PM hopefuls, and they're both just going to continue lying to us about Brexit and denying the shit show that it is. Oh, if in doubt, listeners, blame the French.
So, with that extraordinary debacle over and done with, I decided that I just couldn't take any more of their inane wittering. So I decided, made a conscious effort to give the next debate a swerve. It was going to be on Talk TV. But then I happened to notice on Twitter, people were wondering in a really concerned way what had happened. And I thought, oh, what's this? And there was this clip doing the rounds from at Harry John Rutter, who is a senior showbiz reporter for The Mirror. And he'd captioned, "What on earth happened? I hope everybody is okay." So all you could see was like Truss looking worried. This is the sound from it.
"He's not going to stop there. He's going to challenge the freedom and democracy."
Oh,
my God.
Oh, gosh.
I know.
Yeah. And in the clip, to be fair, Truss did look really shocked and worried.
Yeah, she did.
And it turns out, I mean, she would literally have to have no soul not to be.
We're giving her credit for caring about something. It's bizarre.
That's how low the bar is.
Yeah. But it transpires. Expected just to be there filing her nails. Yeah.
putting in her ear pods, listening to the Nolan sisters. It turns out that the presenter had fainted, which is obviously really horrible. But we know she's okay now and she has recovered. So I think we're safe to reference one rather amusing tweet from comedian Danny Wallace, who, in response to Talk TV explaining that Kate McCann, the presenter, had fainted on air, simply tweeted, "Did someone give an honest answer?" And there was a terrible take on Liz Truss's reaction to the faintings, which has to get a mention, from a Telegraph writer. Yep. Another one.
That old chestnut.
Tim Stanley, his name is. He wrote, "The Talk TV debate was strange and alarming, but Liz's lightning reaction to disaster reminded us she is first and foremost a mum." To which my favourite reply, two of them actually, one was from Philip at Philip J. Cowley, who said, "Because dads are famously known for not giving a shit about fainting people." And at Ewan McComb, who said, "Whereas a childless woman would have shrugged and lit a fag."
Yeah. Whereas all other women, they just start lactating immediately. They rush over and plunge their breast into the person's mouth and cradle them next to their womb. I mean, what a bloody stupid thing to say. And it really triggers me. I remember when there was the old, another joyous leadership campaign, and it was, what's she called? Andrea Leadsom. And she said something so pernicious about Theresa May not being a mother. And actually, good on the Brits, because I think it cost her the whole thing. People were just like, oh, bog off. That's a horrible thing to say.
Do you know what? Didn't even realise that Theresa May didn't have any kids. Thank you for that.
No. And, you know, so what? It's like...
irrelevant. Yeah, really, totally. She's a twat, whether she has or not.
Exactly. She could have 11 kids. She'd still be a twat. And a brilliant
like Boris Johnson.
One of my favourite games to do in the kitchen is me and my daughter. We do Theresa May dancing. And my daughter's actually really good at it because, unlike me, she's long-limbed. She's fabulous at it. Really good.
I'm picturing like
the hours fly by in my house.
Yeah. There was another tweet on this by Peter Stevanovich. Oh, I love him. He is an amazing lawyer and filmmaker who relentlessly holds his government to account. He is famous for cutting videos together, which fact-checked the lies told by Johnson in Parliament, which in itself is a job and a half. And he wrote, "Geez, in the first 30 minutes of tonight's Tory leadership debate, Rishi Sunak and Liz Truss managed to completely eviscerate the whole Tory government. Watch in disbelief." And the thing is, they absolutely did. Take a listen.
"We've got the lowest growth projected in the G7.
Millions of families across the country at the moment are grappling with rising bills in food, filling up your car and everything else.
And the fact is, whatever Rishi says now, we did not need to raise national insurance.
Many families are having to cut back.
Rishi's policies are making us less competitive.
Well, the answer has got to be that we need to do things differently. I think you can be reassured that the NHS is safe in my hands.
I'm afraid some of our hospitals are falling apart. The Queen Elizabeth Hospital in King's Lynn near me, bits of the hospital will be held up by stilts. I'm committed to the 40 new hospitals."
Stilts.
"This is shit, that shit, that over there is shit, that over there is shit. We did this, this is all shit." And there's just not a hint of irony from either of them that they served, defended and voted with the Tory governments that delivered exactly that.
Blimey. Well, hospitals being on stilts aside, with that absolute shit show that is the Tory government hanging themselves out to dry, you'd think that Labour would be creaming it in the polls. And they are ahead. They are. Of course they are. But after 12 years of this and the economy and all the public services and NHS being in such a state, you'd think they'd be, you know, even further ahead. And this week, I don't think they did themselves any favours, because the one thing we should be able to count on, at least in my book, is Labour supporting Labour. I mean, there's a clue in the name, right? I mean, if you look at the Green Party, they're all about nature, essentially, and sort of conserving the planet. And then Labour should be about the workforce, and Conservatives are about conning people. Sorry, conserving. No, conning people. Anyway, the point is, Liberals are just liberal. Starmer's stance on strikes. Okay, so let's have a look at this. And so Labour's position, he has said, is currently that it's for ministers and the unions to negotiate the terms of the strikes. And so ministers aren't to join picket lines, OK? But the thing is, I think this is utterly unsustainable because there's only going to be more strikes going forward. And then what happened was, and there was some controversy around it, but Sam Tarry, who's, is he a backbencher or a frontbencher? Not sure. He was a shadow minister, I think. So he went to a picket line. He sort of defied what Starmer had said. There's a bit of some scepticism maybe about his motives, but Starmer then basically, you know, went and got rid of him. And I just think people are going, why? Actually, even you should be going further to support these strikes. There's huge support for them. All the polls show that. I think there's a massive sea change with people actually going, no, I get that people's wages are so low and something's got to change. And I don't think it's done him any favours. And in fact, yesterday when the Lionesses won their footy, I noticed Keir Starmer sort of tweeted his congratulations, and underneath somebody got massive traction just replying, oh, now you support some strikers, eh? And I thought, yeah. And I know, a bit of a jab, right? But and then a politics professor called Tim Bale, at Prof Tim Bale, said, things that voters give a shit about, not being able to see a GP, waiting lists, scary news about gas and electricity bills, things they don't give a shit about, some attention-seeking shadow minister they'd never heard of, getting sacked from Labour's front bench. Adrian Hilton, who lectures in politics and philosophy, quote tweeted that and said, all Labour had to do for a year or so was maintain a united front and go on and on about the cost of living crisis, soaring inflation, Tory mismanagement and the NHS waiting list. That is all they had to do, literally. And I do think this infighting is just is avoidable and not helpful to the cause of getting the Tories out.
And it's just so disappointing to watch. But before we get to what we think about all this, it's always good to see what our Mick thinks. Mick Lynch, of course, who is the General Secretary of the RMT, the Union for Rail, Maritime and Transport Workers, who is leading these strikes. And this clip is of Mick's take on it, accompanied by a tweet from Saul Staniforth, which said, unfortunately, I think Keir Starmer and the Labour right leadership have picked a side, and it's not the side of the workers.
What I want is Keir Starmer to sort out his values and his message. He's got to sort out whose side he's on in this balance of power struggle. There are too many poor people in this country, and there is a poor distribution of wealth and power. He needs to identify which people he's going to appeal to. Is he going to appeal to the Daily Mail reader or people struggling in working class communities all over this country? If he wants to win back the red wall, he needs to identify people who are low paid and have got precarious employment. At the minute, he seems to be tacking to the right and punishing anyone that identifies with the trade union movement. That's not right for a party called Labour.
Oh, there Mick. You go. Dreamy Mick. How's your Mick Lynch crush going after that clip, Gemma?
It burns strong. I've realised that I need to start going to picket lines because I might pull someone revolutionary in. I've decided that really appeals. No, actually, I probably shouldn't be recommending other podcasts, but the Full Disclosure one by James O'Brien does a really in-depth interview with Mick Lynch. And you find out what a learned man he is, how much reading he's done. And he is not an extremist at all. He is just sensible and fabulous. And he calls himself a feminist, and he's great. And he really wants the Labour project to succeed. And he thinks Keir Starmer's getting this wrong, but he did well on P&O and this and that and that. So it might surprise you if you listen to it. Emma Kennedy, she's always great on Twitter. And she tweeted, the ruling class have always tried to tell workers their rights are not worth fighting for. Don't fall for it. Their wealth depends on your labour. And Mick's right. Mick, my mate, Mick Lynch is correct. I totally agree about knowing what your values are and policies follow. That's something he said a few times, and I think it makes total sense.
Totally. And do you know what, though? Mick's got some competition. Because hello, Eddie Dempsey.
Oh, Eddie. Hello, Eddie.
He came on my radar last week, and he is firmly on it. He is Mick's deputy leader at the RMT, who also happens to talk in absolutely profound mic drops. I don't know where these guys got their communication skills from, but they are epic. How can you not agree with every word in this video posted by @politicsjoeuk? This is Eddie Dempsey.
This is about what type of country we have. And I think everyone in this country wants some very basic things. You want a wage you can live on. You want a house you can live in and raise a family in. You want a health service that's going to look after you when you're sick. You want education for your kids. And you want to be able to retire in dignity. And every one of those things comes into conflict with the private ownership of our economy. And that's where the fight is. Really, this is about who owns what. Are we going to have a country that's run for corporations with some people in it? Or are we going to have a country that's run for the people in it that's got some corporations? And I know what I want.
Oh, I mean, yeah. That to me is just pillow talk. And I just need, for my husband, if he listens,
I think we're both.
I love you wholeheartedly.
You're so right. And I'm going to tell you exactly where they learned to be such good communicators, because this came out in the Mick Lynch interview I mentioned. He was saying how as a trade unionist and in his job, he has to go and debate in a very formal setting to go and talk to the unions. So they learn how to do it. And then he said, so he said, you know, all due respect, some old presenter does not represent a massive challenge to them. They know what they think, what they feel, and how to say it.
Oh, they do it brilliantly.
Like a problem.
It got me thinking. Like, just sound like perps. but it got me thinking about the accents, right? So obviously, in fact, it inspired a tweet that I wrote, because Mick Lynch and Eddie Dempsey don't have posh accents. And one of the biggest misconceptions in this country, I think, is that posh accent equals intelligence. Now, they don't have those, and yet they have spoken more sense in the last few weeks than any of the posh twats in government have in years.
Totally agree. Look at Jacob Rees-Mogg right there. Oh. What a load of old guff he speaks. Yeah, and I mean, it's interesting because obviously I think you and I are incredibly politically aligned. And I have to say, I'm a pragmatist as well. So, you know, we are where we are. Corbyn didn't get in. This is who we've got as a leader. I personally just am so desperate. I really think at this point I would vote for Tinky Winky, La La and Poe. I would. I want these Tories out. I think they are specifically a cabal. There's been so much corruption, etc. We all know that. So, okay, so here's Keir Starmer. Right, okay, what's he going to do? What's he going to do? And, you know, with the Brexit stance, I'm like, okay, why are you being so absolute on that? How's that going to work? And there's lots of things I've been like, okay, but like, just if you get in, then perhaps you'll show us what you're made of. But with the strikes, I just thought, what are you doing? I thought it was wrong.
I know. And I understood why. If you dig into it, there are reasons why he did it. You know, Tory was saying things he shouldn't really be saying, that making up policy on the hoof, as Starmer called it.
But he's got across these divisions, hasn't he? Within the party, because at the moment everybody's attacking everybody else, and you look on Twitter and you've got your Owen Joneses and he's like, rah, and then you've got your Femis and you've got, you know, everybody's kicking off within the opposition, which is so frustrating.
I know. We've got too high expectations on the left, and we're too discerning. We want everything, and we just need to be like, we can't get everything. But with this, I feel like the optics after firing him were probably worse. Like, frankly, I'm just getting so tired of Labour shooting themselves in the foot while also just missing wide open goals. And at David_Osland captured this sentiment perfectly, I thought, when he tweeted, "If only Labour were as angry about Centrica's £1.34 billion profit as they are about junior front benchers attending picket lines." Yep. And our pal, and all-round good guy, by the way, Jolyon Rubenstein, at Jolyon Rubes, echoed the thoughts of many with this clip, I thought.
Starmer became leader of the Labour Party. He made pledges to stick with actually working for collective action. Now, I want the Tories out. I want Labour to win, but not at any cost. And I'm not simply going to accept the fact that actually, when you start sacking members of your own cabinet for attending strike action, which is necessary as a collective bargaining chip, what are you doing? You're playing into the Tories' hands. Because essentially, you're just becoming just like them, just another shade of blue.
Yeah, it's a great speech. Now, he's done this to camera. And I am a good girl, because I was literally really engaged. And then on Twitter, I was like, why are people talking about a bottom? I went back to the clip and he knows what he's doing. He does it in other clips. It is so funny. In the background, there's a mirror and he's got his bum out. He's in his bum in the mirror. So even if you don't care about politics now, just go and have a look at his bum. It's really funny.
I think
if you're going to be an activist and if you're going to protest, you could still do it with your bum out. You know, maybe it's a good way to get people to listen. Maybe next time on the Jeremy Vine, I should just wang one boob out. What do you think? Just wang one out.
Watch the viewing figures soar.
Watch my kids divorce me.
And back to this, like, I don't want to hammer Labour. In fact, I'm desperate to support them. I am like, you know, when you go to a wedding and you are willing the best man to deliver an epic speech, it's like the warmest crowd you'll ever get. That's what I'm like. And yet when he fluffs it, I'm still there clapping and smiling and hoping it's going to get better.
Yeah, exactly. But I think the bottom line is, look, can we just get any old bod in who's, you know, perhaps not going to be sending people to Rwanda? You know, that would be a start. Oh, I mean, my sort of expectations are so low at this point. But also, I just think, well, maybe this is going to mean a coalition at the next election, where I strongly feel like hopefully the Tories will be out. And if it does mean lots more Lib Dems and Labour, etc., maybe that is a good thing, because we've got more hope of proportional representation going forward.
Yes.
Hopefully.
Yes, 100%. My personal view is that Labour, that they are not the silver bullet to everything, but they are a damn sight better than the Tories. I hate it when people say they're the same. Like, genuinely ask yourself, do you honestly think our NHS, education, public sector pay, social care, mental health, whatever, do you really think they're going to be as buggered as they are with Labour? Like, I don't think so. And look, I wish we didn't live in this two-party system, but we do. So when the general election comes, I will be voting for whoever I need to de-seat the Tory in my constituency, which may well be Labour. And my advice is, if you want this corrupt Conservative cabal gone as much as I do, I suggest you do the same.
Right, what a load of old doom and gloom, but hey, at least Twitter makes it bearable by being funny. So here's a tweet which made me chuckle. In light of us discussing, we're back to Dorries again. She has featured heavily this week, heavily. We mentioned her rugby faux pas last week. The Have I Got News For You account, at Have I Got News, said this week, Nadine Dorries wishes the Lionesses all the best in the Euros final and predicts they'll win in three sets.
I saw another one, classic Dean sporting faux pas tweet from Chris McCall, deputy political editor of the Daily Record at Denny News, who said, Nadine Dorries tells BBC News, we haven't had a sporting event like this in the UK since the 2012 Olympics, as she welcomes the opening of the Commonwealth Games in Birmingham. Glasgow was the 2014 host of the same event. I mean, Dorries is just forgetting Scotland.
Basic. It's just making basic. A
wonderful case for independence, I thought.
Flipping heck. I like to tweet by Jeff Norcott. He's a sort of right-wing comedian. He's really cool. I really found his book interesting as well. He's written a novel about why he became... I think it's called Where I Went Right. It's worth a read. He's always like the token right-wing comedian, hanging out with all the Catherine Ryans and that. He put, leaving aside the nonsense debates, Lioness just sounds cooler. We all know lions are lazy pricks who only put in a shift if they absolutely have to. It's so true. And then Marina, it was really funny when the football had happened. Otto English, who's great on Twitter, he was like tweeting basically about how they were going to be starting to do competitive tweets of like who's the most happy about the England winning. And actually, Liz Truss's was fairly, you know, sort of, it was appropriate. It was sort of well done. Rishi Sunak did this tweet where he was like, oh, looking like he's going to explode. But of course, it's like, is that spontaneous? Because you've got a professional photographer capturing this moment of pure joy. But plus, he just can't pull it off. He doesn't look like A, he's ever been in a pub before, and B, he's ever watched football before. And then I was feeling a little bit cheeky. I wrote underneath, I put, that is his face, because he's just found out how much his non-dom wife is saving on tax. Wasn't that kind of mischievous mood? Right, underrated tweet of the week time. Ooh. And it's from video maker Matthew Hurley. His handle is at Matthew Hurley _, and he captioned a clip with these words. Energy companies throwing money at their shareholders when they know it'll cripple millions of homes on low income. And then he put this clip.
We're gonna do it anyway. We're gonna do it anyway. We're gonna do it anyway. We're gonna do it anyway.
I love that. I've watched that so many times. And it makes me laugh every time. And you know what makes it even better? And that our listeners might not know, because they can't tell from the audio alone, is the person singing that clip was none other than Barry from EastEnders.
Yeah. Oh, it's amazing. In fact, look it up, because he does a whole performance and it's, well, you can tell it's very, very passionate. My goodness me. So well done, Matthew Hurley. A great underrated tweet of the week. Now, we're definitely finishing up now, but it's been a joy as ever. And please, please, if you've enjoyed the podcast, do share, ping to people, etc. We are going to be back. Might be slightly later because I'm off to Beefa, to throw some shapes and have a rest and sort of cleanse my brain of Tory shit and forget about politics. But I'll be on my phone, Marina, you know me, pinging you tweets.
Yeah, you're not going to forget about politics, no chance.
No.
And before we go, we would like to leave a little treat for you on the way out. So here is this week's cherry from the Exploding Heads, at Exploding Heads. It is parody, but let's be honest, it's getting very hard to tell what is and what isn't these days.
Colin from Portsmouth is on the line. Hello, Colin.
Why is this government making me worse off? When I voted people to be poorer, I didn't realise it would happen to me.
Well, that's the difficulty, Colin. Be careful of breaking wind in a lift because it might get stuck between floors.
Yes, we all know about the Dalai Lama. Well, look, this government has betrayed me. I elected them to stop woke lefties and immigrants having heating and petrol, and I can't help but think it's backfired on me, if I'm honest.
You should be having the time of your life, Colin. A freezing house, a bath every week, drawing pictures with your finger on the frosted window panes. It's the 70s all over again. You're living the dream.
You'd love that, wouldn't you? You would love that if I was forced to live through things I claimed the youth of today couldn't handle. You'd love that, wouldn't you? Listen, I enjoy reminiscing about things that didn't happen to me as much as the next
man. Well, yes, you do. I'll vouch for that.
But when it starts to personally affect you as well as the people it was designed to affect, that's where I draw the line. I will not be collateral damage as a direct result of my own actions.
Well, what are you going to do then, Colin? Are you going to vote them out?
You bet I'm voting them out. Yeah, this shower has got to go.
Wow.
From now on, I'm voting for Liz Truss as PM.
Right, Liz Truss. Very much the same government as is already in then, Colin.
No, not having that. Do me a favour, right? She's nothing to do with this.
Right.
And I'm not voting Labour either.
No.
Do you have any idea the muck we'd be in if Corbyn were in charge?
Of course, yes.
I'd like my bins collected on time, thank you very much. Anyway, mate, thanks for having me on. Love to the family.
Love to the family, Colin. Love to the family.